Jimmy Akin's Mysterious World is brought to you by the StarQuest Production Network and is made possible by our many generous patrons. If you'd like to support the podcast, please visit sqpn.com/give. You're listening to episode 302 of Jimmy Akin's Mysterious World, where we look at mysteries from the twin perspectives of faith and reason. In this episode, we're talking about a Satanist asking Jimmy for help. I'm Dom Bettinelli, and joining me today is Jimmy Akin. Hey, Jimmy.
Howdy, Dom.
So Jimmy's been answering questions on Catholic Answers Live for over 25 years, as long as the show's been on the air, and the questions can be on almost any topic. And most of them are religious in nature. They can come from people with any faith background, Catholic, Protestant, Orthodox, Jewish, Muslim, Hindu, Buddhist, atheist, agnostic, or anything else. Now, recently, Jimmy was asked a question by a Satanist, and he was concerned about whether he might be possessed. So what did the Satanist tell Jimmy? And what did he reply back? And what can we learn from this exchange? That's what we'll be talking about on this episode of Jimmy Akin's Mysterious World. Jimmy, why did you want to cover this Catholic Answers Live question on Mysterious World?
Well, it certainly deals with subjects that we talk about on Mysterious World. Subjects like demons and possession are mysterious. We've talked about them before, and we'll definitely be talking about them in future episodes. So this encounter on Catholic Answers Live intersects with Mysterious World subject matter. I also wanted to cover it for some practical reasons. First, it represents what I would say to a person in this situation, and that could be useful for listeners to hear about. Second, it shows the diagnostic approach that I take to situations like this, and I think that's valuable for listeners to see a real-life example of. And third, it shows that I really do take this kind of situation seriously. Some listeners might have a question about that, because on Mysterious World, I do not simply leap to the demon hypothesis as the explanation for unusual phenomena. In fact, episode 188 on It's Always Demons is basically a big warning against leaping to demons as an explanation for strange or frightening things without evidence. And episode 281 on alien demons is an examination of some of the problems with just assuming that all UFOs and aliens are really demons. In episodes like that, I've made a point of saying that I believe that demons exist and that they do things in the world, including possessing people. And so we do need to take the demon hypothesis seriously when there is evidence that supports it. I've also made comments both here and on Catholic Answers Live where I question what some well-known pop culture exorcists have said about various things. I'm very glad that we have exorcists and they perform a vital spiritual service in the church. But that doesn't mean that everything every exorcist says is correct. In fact, if you study what different exorcists say, as I have, you learn that they often disagree amongst themselves and their differing opinions can't all be true. So it's not the case that just because an exorcist says something that it's correct, and we need to use critical thinking in this area just as in every other. In fact, I privately speak with exorcists and others involved in exorcism teams, and sometimes they ask me for consultations as a kind of sanity check on particular demonological claims and on particular exorcism cases that they're dealing with, because they've seen and appreciate the critical thinking that they see me using in my work, and I'm happy to help. But one of the things I've discovered in my more than 30 years of experience as an apologist is that when I say things, people often hear what they want to hear, and they often don't seem to hear the careful qualifications I make when I say things. So I can imagine some people who are big fans of pop culture exorcists thinking that I'm dismissive of demons or dismissive of exorcists, when those things are very much not the case. I plan in future episodes of Mysterious World to cover actual cases of demonic possession and exorcism. In fact, I've been on the lookout for some time for a well-documented case of exorcism where possession is simply the best explanation, with all of the rival hypotheses being ruled out. that's actually harder to do than you might imagine. Partly that's for reasons of protecting the privacy of those who've been possessed. That makes it harder to get good documentation. And there are some other reasons that I won't go into at the moment. However, when this exchange happened on Catholic Answers Live, I realized that it would help make the points that I plan to make in future episodes. I do take the possibility of demonic involvement seriously based on the evidence I'm given, and I do think that exorcists perform a vital spiritual service and recommend that people go to them when there is evidence that I'm given that warrants that. In this clip that we'll be playing, note how seriously I take what the caller is saying. In fact, the clip is just under 13 minutes long because of how seriously I took it. 13 minutes is basically a quarter of an episode of Catholic Answers Live, and I never give answers of that length unless they involve something extremely serious. While I allude to other possibilities for what could explain this caller's experiences, I take the evidence that he's reporting to me seriously. I take the possibility of demonic involvement in such cases seriously, and I recommend that he get in touch with a priest who can get him in touch with an exorcist so that a professional can look at the case and see what's warranted.
What should we know before we listen to the Catholic Answers Live clip?
A few things. First, I did not know in advance that I was going to be talking to a Satanist. You'll hear in the clip how I discovered that this was the case. And you'll note that I ask a clarifying question, whether he's actually invoked demons. One of the reasons for that is that not all people who call themselves Satanists actually worship the devil. In fact, the Church of Satan, which was founded by Anton LaVey in 1966, doesn't even believe in the devil. Its members tend to be atheists who reject the existence of both God and the devil. Its current high priest, a man named Peter Gilmore, describes members of the church as skeptical atheists. But they use the image of Satan as a symbol and because they want to be dark and transgressive, but they don't believe he's a real entity. Also, people may remember from past episodes that I've said the real way to invite demons into your life is to literally invite them. Reading Harry Potter and watching movies and things like that is not an invitation to demons, as should be obvious from the fact that at no point in reading Harry Potter or watching a movie do you say things like, "Hey, demons, I'd like to have interactions with you." But actually inviting the demons is literally inviting them. And so one of the clarifying questions I ask is whether this individual has done that.
And with that as background, let's listen to the clip from Catholic Answers Live.
Right to the phones we go. Aaron's in Warren, Michigan, listening on Twitch. Aaron, we're glad you're here. Go ahead with your question for Jimmy.
Okay, I'm in the cult, I guess, and I'm experiencing vibrations through my body. Like, I can only consider it like demons or a spirit vibrating my body, and it can move my arms a little bit. But I'm also experiencing teleportations of objects in my rooms. Now, I'm wondering, is it more obsession or oppression, or would that be demonic possession?
Okay, I need to ask you a few additional questions just to make sure I have a complete picture of the situation. Did you say you're into the occult or a cult?
Like Satanism.
Okay. And have you actually invited demons into your life?
Well, I mean, asked them like with like a prayer, but I mean, right. I didn't speak to any, like literally speak to them or anything. But I said, I have a teleporting of objects. So I'm wondering, and I feel them vibrationally.
Okay, so you're feeling vibrations in your body and you're experiencing something that you say is teleportation of objects. Does that mean an object disappears from one place and appears in another location?
Yes, like one time my guitar pedal fell and then the SD card just immediately disappeared. 2 hours later, it's right in front of me on the floor. Like 2 hours later. And that happened with two other objects, like two screws, like where they're totally gone. And then they just appear right in front of me.
Okay. Well, it now in any paranormal or supernatural investigation, what an investigator, if he's competent, will do is make a list of all of the possible explanations for the phenomena that are being reported, starting with the natural explanations, because it's more common for things to have a natural cause than to have a paranormal or supernatural cause. So if I were investigating your situation, I would want to, look at the situation. I'd want to ask more questions about the vibrations you're experiencing in your body, also because those could be subjective, but they also could be something paranormal. Also, I would want to know about the appearance and disappearance of objects, how far apart the objects were from where they disappeared to where they were found. Could there have been natural explanations? Like, could someone have moved them and forgotten about it? Or could there be pets that moved them or something like that? But assuming that there are no natural explanations, and given the context that you have been involved in Satanism and that you have via prayer verbally invited demons into your life, I would not dismiss the idea of demonic activity, assuming all this checks out. And in terms of the category that it would go in, there are several different categories. Now, you mentioned possession as one of them, and possession is towards the top end of the spectrum. It occurs when a demon takes control of a person and can, for example, speak through them. And it doesn't sound like that's been happening in your experience. So I wouldn't diagnose this as possession, but there are lesser forms of demonic activity. One of them is known as infestation. And infestation occurs when demons are operating in a particular location, like a house or an apartment. And that could affect things in the house or the apartment, like the teleportation of the objects that you described. By the way, there's also a term for that. In parapsychology, that teleportation effect is known as apportation. So the teleportation or apportation you're reporting, if it's paranormal, it could be the result of demonic infestation. Then there are situations where that are short of full possession, where a demon attacks a person. And if the demon attacks the person's body so that there are physical effects, it's known as a vexation. If the demon attacks a person's mind, then it's known as oppression. And if the vibrations you're feeling are physical in nature, and if they have a paranormal cause, it could be demonic vexation because it's your body. You're feeling a physical vibration. On the other hand, if this is more of a vibration you're feeling in your mind, it could be a form of obsession. So those are kind of the categories that would be applied to these kind of experiences. I got to tell you that demons and inviting them into your life is not a good idea. Demons are in opposition to God, and God's highest priority is love. You know, the two great commandments are love God and love your neighbor. Demons are opposed to God, and so they are not into loving God, and they are not into loving their neighbors. And that includes us. They do not love us. They do not wish us well. They want to harm us. They want to harm us spiritually, by leading us away from God, which can even result in the loss of a soul, meaning going to hell. They also want to hurt us in other ways. One of the things we see in the Bible when someone is demonically possessed is they experience a lot of bad symptoms. They can have physical illnesses, which are vexation. The demon can torment them mentally, which is oppression. The demon can even seize control of them temporarily and make them do stuff. And it is not fun. So inviting demons into your life is not a good idea. It does not lead to good consequences. So I would advise you to make a break with Satanism. I would invite you to turn back to God, because he loves us all no matter what we've done. So it doesn't matter to God that you've previously invited demons into your life. God still loves you. He still sent his son, Jesus Christ, to die on a cross to redeem you so that you could be eternally happy with him in heaven. And I would turn back to God and say, I made a mistake. I'm sorry. I want your love. I want your protection. I want your help in getting through these things. And then I would talk to a local priest about these phenomena you're experiencing. Either your diocese in Michigan will have an exorcist or will be able to put you in touch with an exorcist that can evaluate the situation. In some cases, a full-blown exorcism is warranted. In other situations, something less than an exorcism is warranted, like prayers of deliverance. But and anybody can do prayers of deliverance. In fact, the Catholic Church has prayers of deliverance that even lay people can say. But I would talk to an expert if you're having physical phenomena occurring in your house, like things disappearing in one place and reappearing in another. I would bring an expert into this and get an expert evaluation and determine what may need to be done from there. Aaron, also, do you mind if I ask, have you ever been Catholic in your life? Have you ever been baptized or received into the Catholic Church?
No, but I've been baptized like the other Protestant. But okay. I was wondering mainly, though, how can they move my arms if they're not necessarily possessing me?
Well, if it's a, they can move physical objects, and our arms are physical objects, so they could move, an arm without seizing control of your personality. Just like if I was in the studio in California, I could grab Cy Kellett's arm and move it, but I'm not seizing control of Cy's personality. Possession is really when you cease to be mentally in control of yourself and something else starts speaking through you. There's an alternate personality that's manifesting, and you haven't described anything involving like an alternate personality taking control of your body away from you and speaking through you and so forth like that. So it sounds more like vexation and possibly obsession to me rather than full-blown possession. That's not to say, though, if you keep on this path that it couldn't turn into full-blown possession, because once demons are messing with someone, they don't want to just stop. They'll want to press and make things worse for the person if they can. So it's important that you turn to God as quickly as possible and say, you know, God, I made a mistake. I want your help. You could say things like the Lord's Prayer, you know, the Our Father. You could also say the Rosary, even though you're not Catholic. Going to church is a great idea, because one thing demons don't like is things that are holy. And the more holiness you can bring into your life, the less the demons are going to like it, the sooner they're going to go away. And, you know, deliverance prayers is one way of doing that. If you were Catholic, you'd have access to ongoing sacraments like confession and the Eucharist, which are even more effective than exorcisms are. Exorcism is what's known as a sacramental, meaning it's a rite that was instituted. It's a holy rite that was instituted by the church. But sacraments are holy rites that were instituted by Jesus Christ himself. And there are actually, even though you have a Protestant background, there are circumstances where it's possible for a Protestant to go to confession and receive the Eucharist, which is the body and blood of Christ itself. That's supremely holy, and demons really don't like it. If someone's receiving confession and receiving the Eucharist, that just makes it even harder for them to stick around. So you could also talk to the local priest or the exorcist that the priest puts you in touch with to see if in your situation, something like going to confession or going and receiving the Eucharist would be possible for you, because that's something else that can be an additional help beyond deliverance prayers and beyond exorcism.
But the main question I had is how long, since those things are happening, how long would it take, years and years and years to get possessed, or would it like, or is it could never happen, or would it take years, or would it be weeks, or what would it be?
There's no way to predict that because we don't really have a lot of knowledge about the power and the demons have and the choices that they make. So, you know, it depends, among other things, on the number of demons that are involved. You know, an army of demons could beat down defenses easier than one lone low-ranking demon. So there's really no way to predict it. And the best thing to do when you have stuff like this going on is step away from it immediately. Immediately turn back to God, ask for his help, ask for his love, and then follow up by taking the steps I've outlined in order to help end the situation. Because there's no way to predict its future course if you're separate from God. You need to get back with God as soon as possible and get this out of your life as soon as possible.
And we'd like to take a moment now to thank our patrons who make this show possible, including David W., Carl D., Michael K., Valkovius, and Rob G. Their generous donations at sqpn.com/give make it possible for us to continue Jimmy Akin's Mysterious World and all the shows at StarQuest. And you can join them by visiting sqpn.com/give. Jimmy Akin's Mysterious World is also brought to you by DeliverContacts.com, offering top brand contact lenses at always low prices with free delivery. Visit DeliverContacts.com. And by Tim Shevlin's Personal Fitness Training for Catholics, providing spiritual and physical wellness programs and daily accountability check-ins. Strengthen yourself to help further God's kingdom. Work out for the right reason with the right mindset. Learn more by visiting FitCatholics.com. Jimmy, at this point in the show, we would normally ask what theories could explain the reports that we've just heard. What would you say in this circumstance?
In this case, I was not and am not doing an actual paranormal or supernatural investigation. Instead, what I was trying to do is provide pastoral help to a person who was reporting a very dangerous situation. However, if I were on the scene in Michigan and were asked to do an investigation of the case, there are a number of possibilities I would need to look at, beginning with the natural explanations, like always. Therefore, hypothetically speaking, I would need to consider possibilities like, could this be a hoax? Could mental illness be playing a role? Could there be natural physical causes for the reported phenomena? Could something psychic be happening? And could it be actual demons?
Okay, so what can we say about these options from the reason perspective? Could this gentleman just be hoaxing the report just as a joke or for attention?
People hoax things in every area of life, and that includes demonic possession. In fact, in a future episode, we'll be looking at a very famous case involving demons, which loads of people in the audience will have heard of, that turns out to be a hoax. So hoaxes are always possible. However, in this case, I see evidence pointing the other way. First, the caller does not initially say that he's into Satanism. Instead, he says, okay, I'm in the occult. And when I ask him whether he said the occult or a cult, he says, like Satanism. That suggests a reticence to acknowledge what he's actually been involved with, and that's a sign that points towards honesty. If he were a Satanist wanting to pull a hoax or a non-Satanist pretending to be one and pulling a hoax, you'd expect him to magnify these things for purposes of shocking Christian radio listeners. You'd expect him to come right out the gate and say something like, I'm a Satanist and I'm having some frightening things happen and I want your opinion. You wouldn't expect him to be so reticent about acknowledging what he's been doing if he was hoaxing. If you look carefully at what he says, he's very tentative, saying, I guess, a couple of times, initially putting things in the past tense, I was in, before correcting himself to I'm in, and saying the occult rather than Satanism. All of those point towards honesty in this case. So does the fact that he mentions that he thinks it could be a demon or a spirit causing the phenomena he's reporting. You'd expect a hoaxer to just say, it must be a demon. The fact that he mentions the idea of it being a spirit as well, other than a demon, shows that he's using critical thinking and that isn't just he isn't just fixated on the idea of demonic possession as a possibility. Further, in what he initially says, he's distinguishing between obsession, oppression, and possession, and wondering which category it might be in his case. And that also shows critical thinking. And it shows that he's not trying to drive relentlessly towards the conclusion of possession, which is what you'd expect a hoaxer to do, as possession is the most intense of those possibilities. Also, you'd expect him to make up an even more frightening set of things in than what he actually reported. I mean, feeling a few vibrations and having your arm move a bit and having objects disappear in one place and reappear in another is, well, I guess it's a little frightening, but they're not near as frightening as what you'd see in a horror movie. And it's horror movie level imagery that you look for in paranormal hoaxes. In paranormal investigation classes, that's one of the things they teach you. If it sounds like a horror movie, it's likely a hoax. But this doesn't sound like a horror movie. And further, when I ask if he's invited demons into his life, he's careful to say, with like a prayer, but I didn't speak to any like literally. So he's minimizing the amount of contact he's had with demons instead of boldly saying, oh, yeah, one materialized in my presence in a puff of black smoke, and I asked him right into my house. You know, he's being cautious and measured about his claims. I'm just not seeing evidence for a hoax in this case.
What about mental illness? Could that be involved?
There's no way to know that over the phone. What I can say is that the caller didn't sound like he had a fundamentally disordered thought process. He sounded lucid and rational. But it's impossible to diagnose mental illness without a lengthy personal consultation and asking a bunch of questions I didn't ask and having also considerable psychological expertise. I couldn't do all that over the phone, so I basically set that option aside and instead decided to take the report seriously and do what I could to help him at the moment. There's no way I could assess mental illness over the phone, so I did what was pastorally sound and just said, let's take this seriously and deal with the evidence as he presents it.
Now, what about natural explanations for the things he was reporting?
I alluded to those in my answer. I wanted to alert the caller to the possibility that what he was experiencing might be purely natural, so he shouldn't automatically assume it was a demon or a spirit. I thus mentioned that vibration one feels in one's body can be subjective. And when it comes to the teleportation or apportation, I mentioned the possibility of someone moving the objects and then forgetting, or pets moving them. If I'd had more time, I could name other possibilities, like, you know, having a lung infection causing vibrations in one's body, or having random natural muscle contractions or twitches making one's arm move, or having non-cognitive seeing being responsible for the apparent teleportation. Non-cognitive seeing, in this case, being when you are looking right at an object, but you don't cognitively perceive it. So it looks like it's disappeared. And then later you may see it cognitively and it looks like it's reappeared. Non-cognitive seeing is also what's sometimes called a negative hallucination. But I didn't have time to go into all those possibilities with him at the moment. I just wanted to make the caller aware that there are possible natural explanations, so what he was experiencing might not be a demon or a spirit.
What about the possibility that something paranormal, but purely human, you know, something psychic, was happening here?
Two possibilities come to mind for what that might be. The first is a departed human spirit could be involved. In other words, this could be an apparition. And St. Thomas Aquinas would say that apparitions don't just have to involve the saints. According to Aquinas, they can also involve souls in purgatory and even damned souls if God wants them to. So it's possible that a human spirit could be doing something here. The other possibility is that the psychic abilities of living humans could be theoretically involved. This could, for example, be a case of recurrent spontaneous psychokinesis, like in the poltergeist cases that we've looked at on the show, such as in episode 195 on poltergeists in general, or in episode 295 on the Popper poltergeist case. And listeners can go to mysterious.fm/195 and mysterious.fm/295 for more information about poltergeists. But in the phone call, I didn't have the leisure to go through options like this with him because of time constraints. I thus said that I would proceed assuming that there were no natural explanations, and given that he's been involved in Satanism and has invited demons into his life, I would not dismiss the idea of demonic activity. I think that's something that would need to be checked out by a professional. I thus answered his question about what category of demonic activity the reported phenomena sound like, and I pointed him to what he needed to do next: make a break with Satanism, turn back to God, and contact a priest who could get him in touch with an exorcist. To encourage him to do those things, I also discussed how demons do not love us. In fact, they're fundamentally opposed to love and want to hurt us. So involvement with them needs to be cut off. And the thing to do in this situation is turn back to God.
After this episode of Catholic Answers Live came out, some people thought that the caller might want to be possessed, such as when he asked about how long it might take to become possessed. What do you think?
I understand why some people might think that. However, I think there's another very plausible explanation. I was just asking him to make a very serious change in his lifestyle, and his, you know, Satanism may be wrapped up with other things going on in his life. I mean, for example, he mentioned objects teleporting while he was playing his guitar. And given that and the demonic connection, he may well be a member of a heavy metal band or otherwise attached to a heavy metal lifestyle. And not all heavy metal is satanic, but there is a satanic component to the heavy metal lifestyle and the heavy metal scene. And the thought of pulling out of your band and leaving your friends and your current lifestyle can be rather daunting. So he could naturally be wondering how quickly he needs to pull out of all this. He might be wondering if the threat is really that serious. Perhaps he could go on for years leading a satanic rock and roll lifestyle before it would turn into actual demonic possession. So he doesn't need to quit cold turkey and leave it all right now. That's what he might be thinking. Whenever you ask someone to make a big change, it's natural for them to wonder how quickly they need to make it. Maybe they can just let things go on as they are for a bit and ease into this change slowly. In cases like that, we're asking people to change habits, and habits are hard to change. So I wasn't really surprised by his timing question. And I answered it honestly by saying that, you know, we can't predict the course of a case of demonic involvement. And the smart thing to do is to try to end the demonic involvement as soon as possible before it becomes even more entrenched.
At this point, we're crossing over into the faith perspective. So let me ask you a more faith-related question. How common is demonic involvement in situations that people encounter today?
It's certainly not universal. Classically, theologians have attributed sin to three different things: the world, the flesh, and the devil. The world means the influence of other people you see in the world, such as the bad example they set. The flesh means our own personal disordered desires due to our fallenness, and the devil means the influence of demons. So even when it comes to sin, as common as that is, demons are only one possible source, and it's really not worth worrying about ordinary temptations where demons might or might not be involved. Doing so gives the devil too much credit and leads to a lot of unnecessary worry and anxiety. It's better to just ignore the temptations and trust God rather than worrying about, is this a demon? When we want to take the possibility of demonic activity seriously is when it's overt enough that we start getting positive evidence for the demonic hypothesis. The most obvious cases are those of actual possession, where you have an alternative personality speaking through a person, doing preternatural things that the person should not be able to do, and displaying a notable aversion to things that are holy. Those really are the signatures of demonic possession: alternative personality, preternatural abilities, and aversion to the holy. And you need all three to have a solid basis for diagnosing possession. Just one or two of them isn't enough. However, cases of actual possession are rare. I've heard some exorcists say some quite irresponsible things on this subject. In fact, I once heard an exorcist say something like 25% of people are possessed, one in four, which is simply ridiculous. Recently, I was talking with an exorcist who told me that of all the cases he's dealt with, he thinks that he's only encountered actual full-blown possession twice. Now, you'd have to compare that to the number of cases he's actually worked, but it appeared to be a significant number of cases. And on this subject, allow me to quote a very famous exorcist who's kind of, he's a pop culture exorcist, but he's kind of middle of the road to me. Sometimes he's quite sensible, and sometimes he isn't. I'm talking about the well-known Roman exorcist, Father Gabriel Amorth. And in his book, An Exorcist Explains the Demonic, he says,
I must say that the cases of valid and true possession are rare. Cases of vexation, obsession, and infestation, which I shall treat further on, are more frequent.
And this is correct. Cases of actual possession are quite rare. That's broadly acknowledged in the exorcist community, and it's borne out by experience. Very, very few people actually meet the criteria for possession that are laid out in the rite of exorcism. I've talked with some people who work on exorcism cases that estimate that in a city with millions of people, you might have one or two genuine cases of possession. Of course, as Father Amorth says correctly in this case, lesser forms of demonic activity like infestation, vexation, and obsession are more common. And those are the kinds of experiences it sounds like the caller may have been facing. But without doing a personal investigation of the case, I have no way of knowing whether demons are actually responsible for his experiences. It could be a number of other things, including purely natural ones. But he actually had invited demons into his life, and he was reporting strange stuff going on. So an expert, as in his local diocesan exorcist, needed to be brought in. In the meantime, he needed to turn back to God and ask for his help. And you'll notice how I put this fact to the gentleman. I did not try to shame him in any way. I wanted to show him as much of the loving attitude of God as I could in the moment. And so rather than dwelling on how wrong it is to be a Satanist and worship demons, I simply said that he needs to turn back to God and say, I made a mistake, and ask God for his love and help. I also pointed him towards doing things that are holy, because that's one of the things demons really hate and that can get them to leave. In fact, that's my current theory about how exorcism probably works. We'll talk about that in a future episode, but based on the evidence at hand, it appears to me that what one is doing in an exorcism is essentially causing a holiness overload that makes it intolerable for the demon to stay where it is.
One of the things you mentioned to the gentleman is that as someone baptized Protestant, there was a possibility he could receive sacraments like confession and the Eucharist. Some people wondered about this after the episode broadcast. What can you tell us about this?
There is a provision in the Code of Canon Law that not everybody knows about, but it is there. The relevant passage is Canon 844, and it discusses who can administer and receive the sacraments. In Section 3 of the canon, it mentions Eastern Christians, such as Eastern Orthodox and Oriental Orthodox, who can receive confession, the Eucharist, and the anointing of the sick from Catholic priests if they request them. Then, in Section 4, it turns to other Christians not having full communion with the Catholic Church, which means Protestants, and it says,
if the danger of death is present, or if in the judgment of the diocesan bishop or conference of bishops some other grave necessity urges it, Catholic ministers administer these same sacraments licitly also to other Christians not having full communion with the Catholic Church, who cannot approach a minister of their own community, and who seek such on their own accord, provided that they manifest Catholic faith in respect to these sacraments and are properly disposed.
So there are a number of conditions that need to be met for a Protestant to be able to receive confession, the Eucharist, or the anointing of the sick. One of them is danger of death or some other grave necessity. Well, I'm being attacked by demons is a grave necessity. They also need to not be able to approach a minister of their own for these sacraments, which is often easy to fulfill. They need to ask of their own accord, which this gentleman could do. They need to manifest Catholic faith concerning these sacraments, which this gentleman would need to do, and they need to be properly disposed, such as approaching the sacraments reverently and fasting for an hour before communion. So it is possible that someone in his situation could receive the sacraments, and the importance of receiving the sacraments is often stressed correctly by exorcists. because exorcism is only a sacramental, a rite instituted by church authority. But confession and the Eucharist are sacraments or rites instituted by Jesus Christ himself that are promised by God to convey grace. So they're even more holy and more effective. As Father Amworth wrote,
I am convinced that a good confession, which is a very powerful sacrament, is much more efficacious than an exorcism, which, as we shall see, is only a sacramental.
And the Eucharist, which is Jesus Christ himself, is even more of a holiness overload that will make it painful for demons to try to remain. I thus was focused on doing what I could in the moment to point the caller towards the help that he might be able to access most quickly.
Why didn't you just tell him to become a Catholic?
Because that's not something he could do most quickly. That requires time. You can't just walk into a local parish and fill out a card and become a Catholic. You need to undertake a course of instruction first, and the whole process can take quite some time. I thus wanted to point this gentleman to the help that would drive out the demons quickly, given his circumstances. Also, I was already asking him to make a big lifestyle change, going from Satanism to Christianity. I didn't want to make the changes that he needed to make seem even bigger and more dramatic, and thus risk scaring him off and preventing him from doing what he needed to do. Of course, it would be better for the gentleman if he does become a Catholic, and if I had the phone call to do over again, I might throw in a comment like, you know, of course, it'd be even better if you became a Catholic. But if I can use a metaphor, when someone is suffering from a gunshot wound, you don't spend a lot of time talking with them about an overall long-term health plan. You get them the immediate relief from the gunshot wound, and you can address their long-term health needs later. In the same way, if someone may be being attacked by demons, you want to get them immediate relief from the demon attacks and deal with their long-term spiritual health after that. And by the way, if Catholics provide help with getting rid of the demon attacks, that's exactly the kind of thing that can encourage one to become a Catholic afterward.
So, Jimmy, what's your bottom line? What lessons do you think there are to learn from today's encounter?
Well, I think it illustrates how to help someone in this kind of situation. Whenever someone reports a situation like this, you want to take the person absolutely seriously. You don't want to lead by saying, oh, you're hoaxing, or, oh, you must be mentally ill. You take the person seriously and treat them with respect and compassion. You also point out what they're experiencing may not be demonic activity. That can help alleviate fears that they would naturally have. So I pointed to possible natural explanations for what the caller reported, but I didn't insist that the natural explanations were the correct ones. I remained open to other possibilities, including demonic activity. You also want to acknowledge the limits of what you can do. Without doing a personal investigation, I can't be sure what's causing the gentleman's experiences. So I pointed him towards local help so that he could bring in an expert who could do the kind of evaluation of the case that needs to be done. And I mapped out what he needed to do more generally, including turning back to God, using prayer, and receiving the sacraments if possible.
Anything else we should say before we close?
I'd just like to invite the listeners to pray for Aaron from Warren, Michigan, that God will guide him on his path and help him find love and relief from the experiences that he's been having, and the same for all who are in similar situations.
And Jimmy, what further resources on this topic can we offer to the viewers and listeners?
We'll have a link to John Paul II's Prayer for Deliverance from Evil, also the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops on Exorcism, and information about the Church of Satan.
And now it's time to hear from you. What are your theories about the case we heard today? You can let us know by visiting sqpn.com or the Jimmy Akin's Mysterious World Facebook page, sending us an email to feedback@mysterious.fm, sending a tweet to @MYS_world, visiting the StarQuest Discord community at sqpn.com/discord, or calling our mysterious feedback line at 619-738-4515. That's 619-738-4515.
And I want to say a special word of thanks to Oasis Studio 7 for the video and animation work in this episode. you can check out what they do by looking at my YouTube channel, youtube.com/Jimmy Akin. And while you're there, I am trying to grow the channel. We recently passed 50,000 subscribers and we're on our way to 100,000. But we won't get there without your help. So please do subscribe and be sure to hit the bell notification so that you always get notified whenever I have a new video up. There are usually several a week now. Also, be sure to hit the like button and comment on the videos because that tells YouTube that you find them engaging and therefore other people might find them engaging too. And so you can help the show grow by helping YouTube understand this is interesting content that other people might want to see.
Excellent. Jimmy, what's our next episode going to be about?
Next week, we're going to be talking about AA 1025, The Memoirs of an Anti-Apostle. It's a book that many take to be a diary of a Soviet spy who was sent to infiltrate the Catholic Church and undermine it. But the book is controversial, and not everyone is sure what to make of it. So we'll be looking at the evidence and figuring out the truth about AA 1025.
Very good. Folks, be sure to follow Jimmy Akin's Mysterious World in Apple Podcasts, Spotify, TuneIn, your favorite podcast app, or, as he said, Jimmy's YouTube channel, where you should hit the bell to get notifications. You can find links to Jimmy's resources from our discussion on our show notes at mysterious.fm/302. And remember, to help us continue to produce the podcast, please visit sqpn.com/give.
Jimmy Akin's Mysterious World is also brought to you in part by The Grady Group, a Catholic company bringing financial clarity to their clients across the United States, using safe money options to produce reasonable rates of return for their clients. Learn more at GradyGroupInc.com. And by Great Lakes Customs Law, helping importers and individuals with seizures, penalties, and compliance with U.S. customs matters throughout the United States. Visit GreatLakesCustomsLaw.com. And by Rosary Army, featuring award-winning Catholic podcasts, rosary resources, videos, and the School of Mary online community, prayer, and learning platform. Learn how to make them, pray them, and give them away while growing in your faith at RosaryArmy.com and SchoolofMary.com.
Until next time, Jimmy Akin, thank you for exploring with us our mysterious world.
Thanks, Tom.
And once again, I'm Dom Bettinelli. Thank you for listening to Jimmy Akin's Mysterious World on StarQuest.
If you've enjoyed Jimmy Akin's Mysterious World, you'll also enjoy another StarQuest Network show, The Catholics of Oz. Find it wherever you can find podcasts or at sqpn.com/Oz.